The English tenor Nigel Douglas, who's made a specialty of operetta, is also a fine writer. In an essay on performing The Merry Widow, he brings up some key points. He reminds us that audiences, of course, have a great time at Die Fledermaus, but we don't have to believe in those characters. That's not really part of the deal for the artists themselves. They belong to a special set of theatrical conventions, Douglas says, whereby, for instance, a husband can fail to recognize his own wife because she's wearing a mask. In The Merry Widow, on the other hand, Hannah, Valenciennes, and Danilo find themselves caught up in incredible situations. A soprano singing Hannah Glavari is usually a Mozart or Strauss singer. A tenor Danilo might do the light Wagner parts, and a baritone Danilo is usually just right for Rossini's Figaro. Valenciennes is generally a light soprano, but the role does have a lot of middle voice and not many climactic high notes. It's become one of the many soprano roles that in recent years have often been appropriated by lyric mezzos. The tenor singing Camille is usually the right voice for Mozart, the bel canto repertoire, or maybe for Gounod's Faust or Romeo. With these four principal roles, there isn't as much for them to sing as there would be in their usual operatic repertoire, but there's so much that's required of them besides singing. They need glamour and terrific acting ability, including really expert comic timing. In the dialogue, they've got to be skilled in projecting their speaking voices, which is frequently a challenge for opera singers. And in most productions, they also have to dance. Never let anyone tell you that Merry Widow is not a challenging work for the performers. It's a formidable challenge, without a doubt. Let's get back to the story. In Act Two, we move to the garden of Hannah's mansion. It's the next day, and at her party, singers and dancers are regaling Hannah's guests with Pontevedrian-style entertainment. Lehar has written a choral introduction in a sort of faux Russian manner, complete with sounds that imitate balalaikas, but those moments are scored for the tamburitsa. That's one of several long-necked, lute-like instruments that have always been popular in Eastern Europe. Hannah brings a change of mood to the party by favoring her guests with a song. It tells the tale of a huntsman who sighed for love of a wood sprite, the Vilja of the song's title. This is my nomination for the most exquisite solo in the entire history of Viennese operetta. Once heard, Vilja is a melody you never forget. It's not just breathtaking in terms of sheer sound, it's also deeply heartfelt. Here's a soprano showing not only how expressive she can be, but also how easily she can float her voice all the way to the very top of her range. Zeta compliments Hannah on her party's authentic Pontevedrian spirit, but she responds by announcing that during the evening, she'll be hosting a Parisian party meant as a surprise for Count Danilo. Viewing this as a positive development, Zeta wants to speak with Danilo immediately and orders Niegush to fetch him. When Danilo appears, Hannah declares flat out that he's been avoiding her. He chalks that up to military tactics. He's just doing what any smart cavalry officer would do. Their duet is the cutest, breeziest, and most lovable moment in The Merry Widow. It's done in mock military style, and it gives a chance for these characters to indulge in a bit of playfulness. Hannah is still being pursued by Cascada and Saint-Brieuc. They join Zeta, Danilo, the Pontevedrian diplomats Bogdanovich, Kromov, and Pricic to commiserate about how helpless they all are in attempting to cope with the behavior of women. By the time the number ends, the guys are literally kicking up their heels. In productions of The Merry Widow, this is the episode that most often gets an encore. It gives the singers a terrific opportunity to show their teamwork on stage and to act like very boisterous teenagers. Once Hannah is again alone with Danilo, she asks him whether it's all right if she goes ahead and marries the man she has in mind. When he snaps that she can marry whomever she pleases, she accuses him of being jealous. Actually, he can't decide whether he is or not, but they part, each fuming at the other. At that point, Camille begins yet again to plead with Valenciennes for her love. She continues to insist that honor and good conduct must dictate her behavior, and she warns Camille not to kiss her. He summons his most seductive words, and the tenor summons his most gloriously beautiful legato, in comparing the blooming of roses in May to the blossoming of love in his heart. Von dem ich nichts geahnt. Camille sees a little pavilion on the grounds of the mansion, and he begs Valenciennes to come there with him. They'll be alone together and can savor a romantic rendezvous. This may be the most totally rapturous music in all of The Merry Widow. Valenciennes, as usual, is both eager and apprehensive. She joins Camille toward the end of the duet, but essentially this is really more a big tenor solo. If the singer is as stylish as Nicolas Yeda is in this recording, he can walk off with the show through sheer beauty of sound and phrasing. This is music to wallow in. It's up to the tenor to communicate that this heavenly melody really exemplifies operetta at its most lushly romantic. You just heard the first section. Let me now give you the second, which is even more breathtaking. So Camille draws Valenciennes into the pavilion, but the two of them are seen by Niegush, who wonders what to do, especially after Baron Seta orders him to turn on the electric lights in the pavilion. Niegush makes the excuse that he shouldn't do that because he's seen Camille there with a certain lady. He then manages to pull Valenciennes out of the pavilion and replace her with Hannah. When Danilo appears, Zeta gleefully announces that he's discovered Camille's new inamorata. Danilo's curiosity as to the lady's actual identity leads Zeta to peer through the keyhole of the pavilion, and he sees a woman he's convinced is his wife. So he's totally confused when Hannah and Camille emerge together from the pavilion. Now the stage is set for a lengthy and emotional finale. It begins with total confusion on Zeta's part and with Hannah in complete command of the situation.
Hanna und Camille, mein ganzer Geist ist still. Jetzt wird die Sache etwas blau.
Wo ist denn meine Frau?
Wünsch es.
Ich bin stumm und starr.
Was ist geschehen? Du sprichst doch klar.
Hanna und Camille,
so sei doch endlich still.
Ich sah nur deine Dame kurz zuvor. Ich guckte schnell durchs Schlüsselloch.
Das war gerade nicht der Fall.
Ich aber traute meine Ohren nicht, wie dieser Herr da ihr Liebe schwor.
Die Dame, die war ich.
Ich hab geschworen, es wär meine Frau.
Mein Leben, mein Leben, gesteht sich so immer, wenn so hören ist der
To save Valenciennes from disgrace, Camille feels compelled to go along with Hannah when she announces to everyone that she's planning to marry Camille. We hear from him once again, the same lovely melody he just sung to Valenciennes, but now it's directed to Hannah. So this leads into the first full-blown, all-out ensemble in which the other principals add their individual feelings. Hannah is thinking she'll get the better of Danilo. Danilo himself is seething with rage. Valenciennes feels as if all her love for Camille has instantly vanished. And Seta is relieved in that it seems that it wasn't his wife in the pavilion after all. This rises to one of the most magnificent climaxes in Viennese operetta.
Oh,
The disgusted Danilo responds to all this by asking Hannah's permission to tell everyone a story. It's the tale of a prince and a princess. They loved each other, but the prince kept his feelings to himself, never revealing them, and the princess married someone else instead. The despairing prince left her, crying, "Go, take him, you'll quickly repent." Most Danilos sort of half-speak, half-sing this passage, as Eberhard Wächter does in this recording. Lehár has given the singer-actor a very beautiful, genuinely sweet-toned accompaniment, which is a wonderful contrast to much of the content of the story Danilo is telling. It's most important for the singer portraying Danilo to use his storytelling to gain immediate sympathy from the audience. Even if you don't speak German, you'll understand Danilo's feelings in this moment because Eberhard Wächter really seems to be living his role from line to line.
Da hat nun die Dame Prinzessin getrieben ein grausames Spiel. Sie gab ihre Hand einem anderen und das war dem Prinzen zu viel. Du gnädige Dame Prinzessin, du tatest daran gar nicht recht. Du bist auch nicht besser wie andere vom schwachen Kokett. Geschlecht. Doch glaubst du, dass ich mich drauf kränke? Ha, ha, da täuschest du dich. Im Traume ich nicht daran denke. Das sagte der Prinz und nicht ich. Und weiter da sagte der Prinz noch, da nimm ihn, der sei dir vergönnt. Drauf ist von dannen gegangen. Und hast du ich auch Kompliment.
Danilo is about to leave. When Hannah wonders where he's going, he boldly and defiantly answers that he's going wo ich zu Hause bin, where he feels at home, back to Maxim's and the girls who adore him there. And he rushes off furiously. But his anger has the opposite effect from what he intended. It delights Hannah. She now believes that he definitely loves her. Here she is, leading the very exuberant finale of Act Two.
I'm the same.